Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hopefully everyone has had some time to settle back into life after Sunday's loss to the Patriots. Time to think positive thoughts heading into a Thursday night matchup with the Houston Texans. Welcome into the Flight Plan Podcast presented by Game Time Watches, the leader in licensed sports watches. I'm Tim McMaster along with Zach Rosenblatt. Zach, I'm just sitting here drinking some cayenne pepper water, trying to feel good. How are you doing?
You're going to feel younger after that. I hear it's the fountain of youth. That's where it comes from. Right. Thomas Morstead.
the best thing about that story, and I assume everybody that would be listening to this podcast knows, but like Aaron Rodgers thanking Thomas Morstead for basically keeping him healthy by recommending cayenne pepper water. I thought the most shocking thing was that it came from Morstead, that it wasn't just like an Aaron Rodgers invention.
Oh, yeah.
But that the punter who is also older,
who's old, yeah. So I think that's where it comes from, because he's youthful for a 38-year-old punter. Yeah, it's
very Tom Brady-esque, also, like something like this. Definitely something Tom Brady would do.
Although Tom Brady would just be TB12, to be fair. It'd be all branded under his umbrella. But
yes, and it would be cayenne pepper avocados.
With kale. Yeah. You know, it's just one of those things that it will be something that is referenced in a positive way if the Jets come out and look good, or it'll be something that people use as a joke if he gets beat up and they lose to the Texans on Thursday. But
yeah, it's totally a t-shirt if things go well, right?
Like, yeah. Well, the Devontae Adams speech wasn't quite the rallying guy everybody thought, but maybe the cayenne pepper and water, this will be like a thing. You know, we'll see. Maybe this turns their season around and
the Mets had a purple blob. So
yeah, you know, that's true. I have people tweeting that the Jets need Grimace too. So, but yeah, there's, you know, these short weeks are always so strange with the podcast. Cause I mean, there's a lot of stuff happened. So it feels like it's been a while since we did the last one, but it's actually not. It's just like 2 days ago, but, a lot to talk about. You know, we'll see if the Jets look a little better. Maybe they will. Sometimes teams, when they have less time to think, they play a little better, but plenty to talk about. As we tease, we're going to hit some future stuff today for sure.
Yes, we will do that. We're going to talk about in the moment a little bit first, but yeah, we're going to talk about future head coaching candidates towards the end of the show. Zach's got some stuff coming out on that this week on The Athletic. Let's start with right now, because as bleak as things are, this team still has to play a lot of football games before the end of the season. Yeah. And I don't think anyone wants to see four timeouts used every week to clean up potential delay of game penalties. So how do they go about in a short week going from what was going on with the Patriots as far as offensive operations, get to a spot where on Thursday night, they just look like they're not playing a preseason game? Like, I feel like that's what I'd like to see, is just like get the operations down. Oh,
I mean, the fact that this is something they work on all of training camp. And I know they have some new pieces, but that's kind of like the problem I have with it. Like they're all saying, like, you know, I think they're saying like what everybody's for the most part pinpointing the problem. Some of it's like getting the plays in faster. And I don't know. I don't think anybody specifically mentioned whether that was like Todd Downing needing to get it in faster or Aaron Rodgers needing to get the play off faster. I think both are probably factors. There's a lot of the big word was urgency. Like they need a bigger sense of urgency coming out of the huddle, getting to the line, lining up. I mean, as I ranted about the other day, I think ultimately if it keeps not working and it hasn't worked this many weeks, like, I don't know, Aaron Rodgers needs to look at his process, because this is what he wanted. He wanted control at the line. And I think the biggest solution, and this was alluded to this week, you know, both in questions to these guys and just talking about it, Jeff Ulbrich, Aaron Rodgers, was like going tempo, because I think when this offense has been at its best this season was when they were going, whether it's no huddle or getting to the line quickly or snapping it and throwing it quickly. Like, that's when they were at their best against the Titans and the Patriots. And even in some of the moments where the offenses look good elsewhere, like getting the ball to your playmakers in space is good. Get Aaron getting rid of the ball quicker is important. This is going to be a very, very challenging defensive line they're going against this week. So I think you want to get rid of the ball quickly. Danielle Hunter Will Anderson on the other side. Like, those are two really, really good defensive ends. They're going to give Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses a lot of trouble. So it's going to be important. Aaron getting back to what he's great at, which even at, you know, he's shown flashes of being old. Like, he's really, really getting right, throwing the ball quickly and getting it to somebody before the defense is even ready for it. There was just so much sloppiness in this operation the other day, like as bad as it's been, and for it to get worse against a bad team and all that, like, just all around embarrassing. So you hope they turn it around. They didn't have much time this week to work on stuff. They only did walkthroughs. So it's really just about these guys showing up and being ready. You know, is Mike Williams going to learn the offense completely when he clearly didn't really know where he was supposed to be the other day? Like, I don't know. Are these guys going to show urgency when they have only had a few days of rest? Like, I don't know. We're going to find out. I mean, their season already was on the line. It's the odds of them making the playoffs are slim to none, but for now, this is about pride. And so if they don't go out there and have a cleaner operation, then it reflects poorly on a lot of people involved. Cause there's been a lot of, you know, not even just like the timeout stuff, the delay of games, the getting close to delay of games. There's been a lot of like sloppy things that have been coming out about the operation. You know, there was a clip online of three offensive linemen,
Baldinger, right?
Different one than the Baldinger one. Okay. Three offensive linemen blocking one guy. And then there was the Baldinger one where Brees Hall is going to run his route. He bumps into Jake Hansen and like knocks him off his spot. They have like three guys running deep, Davante Adams, Garrett Wilson, and Xavier Gibson. But they have Tyler Conklin as like the safety valve, like right in front of Aaron. Aaron's like getting ready to throw it all the way. And then as he's like mid throw, he hesitates. And instead of throwing it to Conklin, who's wide open, like right in front of him, wouldn't have been a huge gain. He throws it off the back of Tyron Smith. It like deflects, hits somebody else. And then it finally like lands on the ground. Like, just a sequence that's very, as Baldy said, like to his credit, like very indicative of the issues with this team. Like, there's, I don't know if it's poorly coached, like they aren't cohesive. They don't know what they're doing out there. Like, it's just the coaching has not reflected very greatly over the last few weeks, or really this season in general. But, there's probably something to be said about switching the coaching staff in the middle of the season and the kind of effect that can have. But
and having less coaches, right? Like, suddenly you take away the head coach. And
Hackett's still around. I don't know what you're talking about.
It just spreads everything thin, right? When you're trying to fix things, but there's not enough coaches left to do the fixing, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, again, it's just small. Like Aaron Rodgers alluded to it being an issue of not all 11 guys doing their job at once. Instead, there's like 9 or 10 guys and one or two people not doing their jobs. And he said, sometimes me, like, you know, very slyly implicating that it's not usually his fault. And he talked about, he has too many interceptions. He's like, you know, not every interception is as, you know, simple as it seems and all this stuff. So, you know, really deflecting, but, he needs to be better. I think he does know that, even if he thinks there's some responsibility around him for his play. But, yeah, I mean, the operation more than anything is my concern, like even more than, you know, the O-line or Aaron's age, like all that stuff. Like if they can't line up and get plays off in time, then how do you think any of these plays are going to succeed? Like this, I get that Aaron likes to keep these guys off balance. He's done that throughout his career, but he's at a different stage of his career now. Like, they're not scared of him. He doesn't throw the ball down the field. He's very hesitant to throw it deep. He's not, you know, Devon Gotcha, had that quote the other day about him not being like he used to be and him not being mobile and him feeling like he could chase Aaron down. And Aaron's like, yeah, he's probably right. I was pretty banged up, but he claims he got out of that game as physically well as he has in a while because of the cayenne pepper and water. So we'll see what that translates to on Thursday and how he handles it if he gets beat up by Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson and their other defensive. Sheldon Rankins is on the Texans still, former Jet. I think they miss him right now, but yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how this offense looks and if they respond, because so far they haven't responded to a lot of the challenges put in front of them. They've lost 5 in a row. So, it's hard to believe they're going to be able to fix it, but we'll see. You know, this is what the Jets historically do. Just when you think they're completely like toast is when they come out and have some remarkable win. I mean, against the Texans last year is exactly an example. Zach Wilson is brought back into the lineup against his will, has the best game of his career. They beat a really good Texans team, and then they don't really do anything again the rest of the year, other than like a weak win over Washington and an end of season win against Patriots that hurt their draft position ultimately. So, but yeah, I mean, this is like the kind of game the Jets historically win, but I'm at the state right now where until I see them operate in a way that they can close out these games, they're going to keep losing them. All these games have been close for the most part, which is one reason. I think that's probably why they're technically favored right now. I think it was like,
yeah, they are a 2-point favorite,
which is kind of crazy to think about considering all the negativity around them and how good I think that the Texans haven't looked as clean as they should, but they still talent wise are above them. Even if they're not going to have Diggs and won't have Nico Collins.
But, yeah, they have no receivers. Well,
which is what happened last year. And they had Tank Dell, and I think he got hurt during the game last year too. So yep. It's kind of like deja vu a little bit with Aaron at quarterback. It's going to be hard not to point out how good Zach was against them if Aaron Rodgers is bad against them this week, because that's like a fact. Zach Wilson had a 300-yard game, which Aaron has not had since 2021, I believe. So, yeah, it's just a lot of things to think about on Thursday night.
One thing that will definitely be different on Thursday night is the kicking game for the Jets. Yeah. Zuerlein placed on injured reserve. They've signed two practice squad kickers, Riley Patterson, Spencer Schrader. We don't know which of one of those two guys is going to be kicking for this team on Thursday night. One question, though, about Zuerlein. He goes on IR. They don't release him. How much of that is the contract and the fact that they shelled out, what is it? It's over $4 million for 1 year for Zuerlein, which is pretty good money for a kicker. How much is it that, you know, if he didn't have that contract, would they have just released him? Or what's the because it's well, a knee, and I'm never going to accuse anybody of like injuries and stuff, but a knee injury and he's on IR.
It's possible it's part that like sunk cost kind of thing, but I think it's also he's very respected in that building. They do love Greg Zuerlein. Yeah. He's a really good guy. He's, you know, a guy that I think like the special teams group, like they love him. So I think there's probably as a courtesy to this guy at maybe the end of his career, they're letting him stick around and keep getting his paycheck kind of thing. But it does feel, you know, the knee injury just all of a sudden popped up yesterday. Jeff Ulbrich didn't bring it up in the practice press conference where he lists off all the injuries. Like Greg did practice with him yesterday, I believe, or maybe it said that he was limited or something like, yeah, I think it said he was limited. So this knee injury that appeared wasn't bad enough for him to not kick the ball in practice. So they did this tryout. You know, the two guys they signed to the practice squad, one's Riley Patterson. I'm blanking on the other guy's name, 'cause he's only kicked extra points in the NFL. You probably have it in front of you.
Spencer Schrader.
Yeah. Spencer Schrader. So Riley Patterson, kind of funnily enough, he's been usurped by Austin Siebert multiple times in his career. Like the Lions cut him for Austin Siebert, and then the Commanders cut him for Austin Siebert, who was like the best kicker in the NFL after the Jets let him go. But yeah, Riley Patterson, I think he's converted something like 88% of his field goals in the NFL, which is pretty good. I would think he'd be the favorite, but this other guy clearly impressed him in the tryout the other day. Because in college, not a great indicator. He converted only like 69% of his field goals, which is pretty low for a college kicker to make it to the NFL. So maybe he looked really good in practice the other day. But, you know, we were in the press conference room the other day talking about like because the Jets had that terrible history of kickers over the recent years until Greg Zuerlein. But there was like a moment, I'm blanking on the kicker's name. Maybe it was Sam Ficken or Kerr Vedvik. Some real classic names for you guys. Like Adam Gase is having this press conference like after he had a terrible game. He's like, you know, he looked great all week in practice. We were really confident in him. Not so good at the start of before the game. Like he like admitted that he looked bad before the game, and so they were worried. But like Adam Gase, he used to talk. I mean, I never covered him, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess. But I think media wise, he was so good because he was just like he kind of would say what he was thinking most of the time. He like couldn't help himself. Whereas I don't think you're going to get Ulbrich being very nice about Greg Zuerlein. Jeff was asked about like how you could talk about accountability while still like keeping Greg around, and he kind of said an answer that I didn't think was amazing because he was trying to be nice. But it was pretty clear Greg was done, and if they had gone into Thursday with Greg as their kicker, I think the fans might have rioted. So It's probably too late. Like, he arguably cost him at least one game, probably two, if you want to count this last one. But like we talked about, there's other factors in that loss. But they had to make a change, and we'll see if Riley Patterson or the 69% college kicker are going to be a difference, because this team is going to need to kick field goals. Like, this is, that's the craziest part. And we alluded to this on our four downs pod, but he like was the source of their scoring for the last 2 years, and he became the source of their non-scoring this year. It was like really interesting dichotomy.
All right. Belichick and Reddick became a thing this week. Can't get away from Belichick and this Jets team. So Reddick, obviously, you know, first game of the season, plays on Sunday, had three pressures. I think he got credit for no sacks. Obviously limited action. Belichick on McAfee, another thing that comes up on in Jets land all the time, because Aaron Rodgers, obviously, but Belichick was on McAfee and just referenced that Reddick came into the game and just ran by the quarterback and created a bunch of scramble lanes that the Patriots were able to take advantage of. So word got back to I don't know if Reddick is a avid McAfee viewer or if somebody sent him a clip, but Reddick got wind of this and he went on Twitter and said, someone called Bill Belichick and give him a job. Seems like he's home, bored, and can't keep me out of his mouth. Come up for air, why don't you? No diddy. And then that led, I mean, there's plenty of video. If you look at the comments after that, the replies, like, there's all sorts of video clips of like Reddick actually doing exactly what Belichick accused him of. It's just a, like, just don't comment, man.
Of all people, don't. For him to do it. Like, this is the same guy who refused to answer any questions about his holdout. First, he refused to talk to us in the locker room. And look, I didn't lose my mind. Like some people, I know people make fun of media people for overreacting when guys refuse to talk. I just think it was pretty lame of him to do this distracting holdout the entire season while his teammates are battling and the fans are, you know, really upset. And he comes in and is like, I'm not going to talk about the thing that is the only reason why I haven't been here. And because it was a pathetic holdout, ultimately, I don't think he probably has good answers for it. But yeah, after the game, he refused to answer questions about it. He got some pressure, but like Bill Belichick referenced, he was kind of running right by him. And you know, him showing up is a little too late, obviously. So, I don't think he should be the one commenting until he wants to like actually comment on the nature of what he's been doing the last 6 months. So we'll see. I mean, it's very weird. It feels surreal that he's even on the team now, because like almost even didn't even feel like it was real because of this holdout being so insane. And I do wonder, I mean, this game is probably going to go a long way toward the Jets deciding if they should be sellers. They should be anyway, probably. Is Joe Douglas going to be the one doing that? Like, I don't know how willing he is to do the bidding for the next GM, but Reddick still, to me, feels like someone who's an obvious trade candidate, because I don't know that any future GM is going to want to bring him back unless he starts dominating like he used to. But
does he have any value, though?
Yeah, not much. But I mean, at this point, it's trading away guys, trying to save some money, build up some draft capital. Like, but again, like, why does Joe Douglas care about that if he knows he's on the way out, which at this rate, he almost certainly is. So it's a very weird spot being like out of it this early for a GM on the hot seat. Like, I can't imagine there are that many comparable. Like, I know there have been teams that have been really, really bad, and you know the GM's gone probably, but like the head coach already being fired and all that stuff. Like, it's a very interesting situation as we head into the trade deadline. And depending on what happens to the game tomorrow, we'll probably either tomorrow or either Friday or Monday or whatever, we'll do a trade deadline pod, because the Jets are at very least going to be an interesting team to consider for the trade deadline. But yeah, the Reddick thing, like, I don't know, man, don't tweet. Sauce got off Twitter. I think that was the right move. Maybe you should too, Hassan.
It's interesting about Douglas, because a lot of times when a team is really bad, right, and you know there's going to be a change in the front office, you're afraid that GM will make some stupid, nearsighted moves just to try to save his job. But in this case, like, Woody did that for him.
Yep.
Which is,
I know, it's made it
so strange.
I mean, the fact that not only did he do that for him, but he fired Robert Saleh without consulting Joe. Like, So you fire the coach, you make this blockbuster trade, you push to get Hassan Reddick in the building when Joe wasn't really able to do that because he was sticking to his guns. Like, he's kind of stripped Joe. I don't really know how to phrase this, but like, what is Joe even doing if Woody's just like, you know, completely taking over?
He's like Hackett, right? So, he's entered like a Hackett realm.
I mean, as far as we know, I mean, there's all this kicker stuff. Yeah, he's certainly still like, I'm not in there, but
yeah,
it's a very unique situation. And I would say the way it's been handled probably doesn't make this the most appealing job for any future GM, especially because I think Joe is pretty well respected around the league. So it's all weird right now. And if they somehow win tomorrow, the vibes will be good for 10 days or better for 10 days. I mentioned this the other day. I am very curious to see what this crowd looks like. The tickets were getting pretty cheap last I looked. How quickly are they going to boo if the offense goes like 3 and out? What's the crowd going to look like? Like, I don't really have a great read. I can't imagine it's going to be a sellout crowd though. But yeah, I don't know. It's week 8. They a lot of their big games at the beginning of the season were road games. So we're going to have a lot of home games if they keep going down this path where the stadium is emptier and emptier. And I think that probably upsets Woody Johnson as much as anything. So we'll see what that looks like starting on Thursday.
All right, before we move forward, let's take a minute to talk about Game Time Watches. They are our presenting sponsor. We're psyched to be working with them here on Flight Plan. You can save 25% at GameTimeWatch.com using the promo code NYJPOD25. Couple of products that you should check out when you're on there. There's Jet stuff, obviously, New York Jets, Gotham City football stainless steel watch. I showed that last episode. Really a nice weighted watch, heavy, $300 value, stainless steel case band and case back, custom color texture dial, scratch resistant, shock resistant, water resistant, has the Jets logo on there. Great box that it comes in as well. Only 500 of those, limited edition. They also have this, showing this if you're watching us on YouTube. It's the watch and wallet set. Black vegan leather band with accent stitching, durable solid metal alloy case, scratch resistant mineral glass crystal, Japan quartz accurate movement. Just a great little watch. Again, it's gametimewatch.com. Save 25%. Use the code NYJPOD at gametimewatch.com. And then the wallet, also black vegan leather, pebble texture, 6 interior car slots, large compartment for paper money, officially licensed NY Jets logo. And we did mention last episode that the winner of last week's picks for the week is getting one of these watches. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. And then the season champion is going to get the first watch that we showed last week as well. More giveaways coming. Thanks again to Game Time Watches for that. Head coaches, time to talk about the future, Zach. We start. You have a short list. I know you have more than this in the article that you have coming out, but these are the hot names. Before we get to the names, though, one question, like above all of this, is that we can actually touch on as we go from name to name. Is anybody going to want this job?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be. I think ultimately the answer is yes, because there are only so many head coaching jobs in the NFL. And I think there's always going to be guys who think they can do what a coach before them could not do. And the Jets, they have more talent on their roster than usually a coach would inherit. Like Robert Saleh didn't inherit a roster that had this much talent on it. As you know, I know there's going to be a lot of holes in a lot of areas they have to fix and a quarterback and all that stuff. But Sauce, Garrett, Breece, you know, a lot of these guys, Quincy Williams, Jamie Sherwood, you know, Michael Carter II. Like it's a pretty good core of like fairly young talent, so there's some appeal to it. But yeah, ultimately, like if you're choosing between the Jets and another job, like Ben Johnson is one of the names that I gave you to talk about today. Like, would he?
Yeah, let's start there because he's the name right now.
Yeah, I mean, he turned down Washington last year, and that looks like, you know, one of the most appealing jobs in the league right now with Jaden Daniels running the show. So he's been very picky with what he wants because he knows he has something good in Detroit. I think he's making probably as much as some head coaches do as an offensive coordinator. He's like the name. So I'm skeptical he would come to the Jets unless it didn't work out elsewhere and he saw something he liked here. I think Vrabel is the obvious number one target for me. I think he should have been their target last offseason. It just like makes so much sense. Like he's a culture setter. He's a guy that demands respect because he was a player. He's a guy that demands accountability, like the way he approaches things. On top of, like, if you just remember when his first 4 years in Tennessee, he had at least 9 wins in each year, which is really hard to do. And it's really hard
and
to do.
And never big when, expectations.
Yeah, never like big expectations. That was going to be my point. Like, how often were the Titans not the favorite in games where they either won or competed? Like, they were a tough, gritty team that were always well prepared. And I think he's probably the apple of most Jets fans' eye, I would say. But again, it's another, like, if he's choosing between the Jets and, you know, I don't know, the Eagles or even the Giants or the Cowboys, like, are you going to choose the Jets over these teams? Like, I don't know. I think it's all something to consider. I think Vrabel will take an interview with the Jets, I would say confidently, but it's all about what options are on the table. Cause again, he's someone who wants to be a head coach again. And if he doesn't get offered whatever other openings there are, like, would he come to the Jets? Like, I think in that scenario, probably. So those were the top two candidates, I would say. And then I had a couple others I told you to.
Yeah, like a couple others. Well, one is, we talk about Ben Johnson, Lions offensive coordinator. Aaron Glenn is Lions defensive coordinator. Also, there's plenty of buzz around him. And he has the fact that he played for the Jets.
Yeah, that's why I think he's extremely intriguing. I think he's built the Lions defense. This year, they're at their best. He's been there for a few years now. He's highly respected by people in the Jets building. He is another defensive guy, but he's a defensive guy that played for the Jets and was like a really good Pro Bowl cornerback. So I think he would demand respect in the locker room. He's going to get a shot. I don't know if he's going to get there's a lot of intriguing candidates, and offensive coordinators tend to get the priority, but he's one that jumped to mind for me as someone who hasn't been a head coach yet, but has the tools to be a pretty good one.
All right. And then one more name that has been a head coach, that is Brian Flores, Vikings defensive coordinator right now, but formerly the Dolphins head coach. Obviously, that was a messy divorce in Miami where Flores was successful.
Yep.
But maybe rubbed some people the wrong way, including ownership, and ended up there's obviously the lawsuit, the wrongful termination, all that stuff that went along with it. But he has come out the other side and is doing an excellent job with that Vikings defense.
Yeah, I mean, they went from basically the worst defense in the NFL 2 years ago to one of the top five defenses this year. And a lot of it's just about the culture he set in that room. You see a lot of stories coming out of there from Alec Lewis from The Athletic, does an amazing job. He's written a lot about Brian's impact. I think Flores learned a lot from his time in Miami in terms of like leading guys, and it seems like guys in Minnesota love him. But in general, he's like in the Vrabel mode of, I think he's a culture setter. He's an accountability holder. Like, his teams are disciplined. Even the Dolphins, like, they weren't perfect when he was there. He did lead them to 10 wins, I believe, in his second season. I think his relationship with Tua has been well documented. It wasn't great. But I think, you know, I don't know him personally. Like, Vrabel, someone who like is going to coach you hard while also, like, at the end of the day, he's going to shake your hand and you can shoot the shit with him. I don't know if Flores has that necessarily. I just don't know him as well, but I get the vibe that he's someone that's well respected by his players. So, I think he's going to get a shot to be a head coach again, whether he actually gets offered the job or not, or, you know, if the NFL, you know, he sued the NFL or whatever it was, or because of that whole process when he was interviewing for jobs. But I think he's highly impressive. And again, I think the Jets, if they can, should be trying to get somebody with head coaching experience, because they've done Adam Gase had it, but it wasn't good head coaching experience before. Like, if someone like Vrabel does not come available very often, a successful former head coach, Pete Carroll, he's a little older, but, you know, successful head coach, even if he was fired by the Jets after 1 year back in the 90s. And Flores has had some success as a head coach. Like, these guys that have done it before, I think that maybe reduces the amount of rebuilding time you need when you have a coach who's not really learning on the job necessarily.
It's interesting, this head coaching carousel and everything. This week, I was just thinking about the fact that the Jets hired Robert Saleh. DeMeco Ryans became the 49ers defensive coordinator at that point. Yep. And then the Texans hired DeMeco Ryans, who, I mean, it's only been 2 years or one and a half, a year and a half.
Looks like a pretty good hire, yeah.
Looks like a great head coach. So it's like they got the wrong defensive guy off that 49ers staff.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that is an interesting part. Like, the thing is, with guys that have never been a head coach before, you kind of don't know how they're going to do when they get there. Like Salah, when he was only focusing on the defense, was a fantastic defensive coordinator. Like that's unquestionable in San Francisco. I think that's probably why he'll get hired, whether it's by one of his friends or somebody else. Like he'll get hired as a DC somewhere. Whereas, you know, like Adam Gase never got a job after the fact, but yeah. So anyway, I mean, my point being that you just don't know what you're going to get with these coaches that have never done it before. Like Dan Campbell, like nobody really know what he was going to be, and he's become what he is. Like he's turned that culture around. Like you want a culture setter. Like they don't need to be crazy like him, but you need a culture.
And that was the thing, is he had that crazy press conference that I think made most people say like, oh, this isn't going to go well.
And it can go in any direction.
But he's
after
not
that.
Actually that crazy.
Yeah. Like, he just loves football. He's like a football guy through and through. So you go, you know, coach by coach, you can analyze all these different coaches. And, you know, Vrabel was not a head coach before he went to Tennessee, and right away he did a good job. Maybe there's something to like
really the only successful Belichick.
But he didn't coach under Belichick is the difference. Yeah. So, right. But he did coach under Bill O'Brien. So he's kind of like a part of the
O'Brien,
tree.
Yeah.
I just think there's something to it. Maybe there's something to like these guys who are former players, especially linebackers. If you just look at Vrabel and D'Amico specifically, like successful NFL linebackers, is very interesting. And Woody might want to go the opposite way that he did this last time and go for an offensive minded guy. And there are a bunch of those. And I have some on my list. I hope you all look. I think I have something like 18 or 19 candidates on the list. Some that I like more than others. Some that'll bring about some passion, and some that'll bring about some anger for even suggesting them. But I hope you guys read it tomorrow when it comes out in the morning.
All right. Before we get to picks, just thoughts on, like, in your gut, how do you feel like, after talking to the team a little bit this week, how do you feel like this game goes on Thursday?
Well, I've stopped taking what people tell us during the week as like any gospel going into a game, because I've learned my lesson. Last week was the best practice week they've ever had. So
the kiss of death.
It's not anything based on vibes or anything. I feel like they're going to come out and play better in this game, and I could see them stealing a win. I just don't see it. I think the Texans are too talented, even without their receivers. They have a really good, Joe Mixon's been really good. He's probably better than any running back they had last year. So, ultimately, I think the Texans win. Maybe the Jets keep it close, but I just don't feel like the Jets have earned the benefit of the doubt, certainly. So I'm going to assume they lose until they prove me otherwise, because they lost to one of the worst teams in the NFL. So this is how it goes. You have to earn the respect.
Yeah, they certainly haven't done that. All right, let's look at the picks and how we're doing so far. First, this is last week. So our winner of the watch, I will try to get, there's the one issue here is that Poolhost doesn't clearly give me emails for everybody, but I will put on my investigative hat and track down Duke 60.
Well, if you see or hear this Duke 60, then reach out to me or Tim.
Yeah. Reach out to us, you know, comment. There's plenty of ways to get in touch with us, Twitter, whatever. So Duke 60, Trevor G 17, and Scottish Jet all tied with 7 correct picks out of 10. Good job by all of them. But Duke 60 gets the win because he predicted 41 total points in the Giants Steelers game and ended up being 44. Trevor G at 39 and Scottish Jet had 34. So that's the week standings. That brings us to season standings, where we have a new leader. Wow. Mr. Slippery has taken over the lead. He got 5 right. Boy Green,
like, no, he forgot picks last week. That's why he fell back.
He's still only 1 back though, so he's still in the hunt. Mr.
Slippery had a big lead. He blew his big lead by not picking that week.
It looks like it's going to come down to the end though. This is pretty good. 46, 45, 44, 43 at the top there. So keep it going. And at least one watch giveaway. We'll see when we get to the end. Maybe it'll be top 2 if it's close, or we'll figure that out. Yeah. But thanks again to Game Time Watches for the awards, because we've never had good awards. Yeah. I mean, a hat and a sticker last year was okay.
Pretty cool.
But I think we've definitely stepped up here this year. All right. Final thoughts, Zach.
Yeah. I mean, let us know if you guys are going to the game. I am curious to see who shows up. And honestly, I'm curious, out of our listeners, I've seen a lot of stuff about how Jets were asking for renewal of season tickets and they raised the prices and all that stuff. I'm curious how many of you got that price raise and if you plan on renewing or if you already renewed or not. Cause I got in the sense that there are a bunch of people who have not renewed. So, it's a very interesting time in Jetsland. For the sake of everything, I mean, it's probably better at this point if they just keep losing and get a good draft pick, but for the sake of like entertainment and people caring, it would be nice if they won tomorrow night, I would say. So I am hoping for a better football game out of the New York Jets.
We need a little mini win streak to get things back to,
we need some winning pods,
some miracle thing. Yeah, absolutely. Rex Ryan though, in the chat, not the Rex Ryan, I don't think, but Rex Ryan says he'll be at the game, Zach. Is Rex Ryan in your story?
He is actually, because he's been like promoting it. He's been throwing himself out there for the job. So.
Yeah. That would be wild.
I mean, the last coach to make the playoffs for the Jets, you know, I mean, but there's probably a reason why he's been a broadcaster for a while now, but still.
You wonder if maybe the game has passed him a little bit. Mm-hmm.
It would be like a Joe Gibbs thing when they brought him back like years later.
Yeah, it'd be good. Like, it's one of those things where it's good for culture, value, probably.
Yeah.
Bringing a guy like that back. Like, he probably, like, hey, this guy's a winning coach, but is he still there as far as the X's and O's? The NFL changes so much from year to year. Yeah. Even though he's in TV, like, is it really that understanding of what's going on? I don't know. But anyway, just more fun things to think about. That's going to do it for us. Thursday night game. We're not sure. We're going to base our next pod on how the game goes. We'll either be back on Friday if it's a game that we just got to get back on the mic and talk about. If not, it'll be Monday and we'll gear it more towards trade deadline, which is Tuesday. Enjoy the game and vote next week as well. Get that in there and we'll talk to everybody soon.